As we survey the different metaphors of God in the Old Testament and follow their trajectory through the Old Testament into the New Testament, we come now to a rather surprising one. As we come to a figure in the first nine chapters of Proverbs that we refer to as woman wisdom, woman wisdom. Now, at least in terms of the Old Testament, this figure is pretty much restricted to the book of Proverbs, though there might be an allusion to her at the end of Ecclesiastes 7, but we won't worry ourselves about that today. Now, rather than diving right into the parts of Proverbs that describe woman wisdom, I'm going to begin by reading the introduction to the book of Proverbs, namely Proverbs 1, 1 through 7, talking a little bit about the concept of wisdom in general, before we then look and see how woman wisdom functions within the book of Proverbs. After that, we're going to turn our attention to New Testament appropriations of the picture of woman wisdom. And I think it might be rather surprising, first of all, to see how the New Testament applies the description of woman wisdom to Jesus. But then also, we'll have to be extremely careful as we describe the nature of that association between Jesus and woman wisdom. Because, as I'll explain later in the lecture, some thinking about this connection has led to serious theological problems. Okay, so let's turn to Proverbs chapter 1. And after the superscription, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. We read these. This is often considered the preamble to the book. It's talking about the purpose of the book that follows. It says, "For attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life." So let me just pause here for a moment and say that already we're learning that the purpose of the book of Proverbs is to impart wisdom to its readers. And let's talk a little bit about what wisdom is in the Old Testament. Well, thus far in the reading of the preamble, we can say that wisdom is a skill of living. Wisdom is knowing how to navigate life in such a way as to avoid pitfalls and maximize success. And as you read on in the book of Proverbs, you see success would be defined in ways like being able to acquire material goods, sustain oneself, develop healthy relationships with other people. Have a happy life, a kind of practical skill of living. Matter of fact, biblical wisdom is very similar to what we call today emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is the ability to do the right thing at the right time, say the right thing at the right time, experience the appropriate emotion for the circumstance at the right level. And the reason why I invoke this category of emotional intelligence at this point, related to biblical wisdom, is to also remind you that recent studies have shown that while a high IQ has very little to do with what we might call success in life, a high EQ or emotional quotient does studies show that it has a high correlation with things like having and maintaining good relationships, getting a job and keeping it, and so forth. Now, for those of you with high IQs out there, and I'm sure you all have such, let me assure you that you can have a high IQ and a high EQ, but if you have a high IQ without a high EQ, according to studies, you may not get very far in life because you don't know how to relate to people. You don't have those social skills that the book of Proverbs is intending to impart to you. However, if we stopped our definition of biblical wisdom at that level, we would be seriously shortchanging it. I mean, just look at the second half of verse 3. It goes on to say that the purpose of the book of Proverbs is to give wisdom, which leads to doing what is right and just and fair. So we now move from a kind of practical definition of wisdom to the ethical definition of wisdom. It's to be wise isn't just to be skillful in living, but it's to be a good person. You don't achieve success on the backs of other people. You are just, you are right, you are fair. But again, if we stopped our definition of wisdom at that level, we are seriously shortchanging our understanding of biblical wisdom. And I'm going to fast forward down to verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. This is often referred to as the motto of the book of Proverbs. It's a teaching that you find also in the book of Job, Job 28:28. You find in the book of Ecclesiastes, and you find also in Deuteronomy and other books that talk about wisdom. You don't even get to square one with wisdom, according to the book of Proverbs, unless you have the proper relationship with God, which is defined as fear. Now, this word fear is often off-putting to some readers. They wish that it was the love of God was the beginning of wisdom, but there's a reason why it's the fear of God that's the beginning of wisdom. Because if you fear God, and this is not the kind of fear which makes you run away from somebody, but it is the kind of fear, it's much more profound than the simple English word respect can communicate. It's the kind of fear which acknowledges that the other, in this case, the Lord, is so much greater and more powerful than you are and is somebody that you approach with humility and with an open ear. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. This is repeated a number of times in the book of Proverbs, sometimes with knowledge, sometimes with wisdom. Now this provides a kind of background for our understanding of the role of woman wisdom in the book. First of all, the book of Proverbs has two major parts to it. Chapters 1 to 9 are discourses or lectures, predominantly of a father to his son, but also of woman wisdom to all the men. And then Proverbs 10 to 31 is composed of what we might call Proverbs per se. The short, typically two-line observations, admonitions, prohibitions. Proverbs 10:1 is a good example. A wise son brings joy to his father. A foolish son brings grief to his mother. Or Proverbs 10, verse 4, lazy hands are soon poor. Hard workers get rich. And by the way, especially the second one, but both of them, if they're isolated from the broader context, seem as just so much practical advice with no theological significance. But my contention will be, if we understand Proverbs 10 and following in the context of Proverbs 1 through 9, particularly in the light of the figure of woman wisdom, then we'll see that even a proverb like lazy hands are soon poor, hard workers get rich, have theological significance. Okay. In Proverbs 1 through 9, there is a major metaphor that runs through all the discourses, and that is the metaphor of the path. The metaphor of the path. And everybody is on a path. Path stands for journey of life. And there are two different types of path. There's the straight path, the well-lit path, the smooth path that leads to life. And then there's the dark, twisty, potholed, snare-filled path that leads to death. And we're all on one or the other. Now, this path will lead us eventually to chapter 9. And in chapter 9, we are walking on the path by a mountain, and we hear a voice, and it's the voice of woman wisdom. So now we turn our attention to woman wisdom. Proverbs chapter 9, verses 1 through 6 says, "Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out its seven pillars. She's prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maids, and she calls from the highest point of the city. Let all who are simple come in here. She says to those who lack judgment, come eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding." So woman wisdom lives in a magnificent house. That's, I think, the meaning of the seven-pillared house. It's a magnificent grand house. She's prepared a meal and has invited us, because we're the men who are being addressed by her, the readers of the book, whether you're male, female, young or old. We identify with the implied reader, namely the men in this case who are going by her house, and we're being invited in for a meal. Now, even today, to invite somebody over for a meal is to invite them to a relationship, to invite them to a deep relationship. And that was even more the case in the ancient world. If you invited somebody to a meal, you were saying, in essence, I want to develop an intimate relationship with you. So that's what woman wisdom wants us to engage in a relationship with her. Now, before we can respond to her, we get, if you'll notice at the end of the chapter, a second invitation. Except this one is from another woman, the woman named Folly. Verse 13 to 18 says, "The woman Folly is loud. She's undisciplined and without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to all those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of the grave." So the point is that the reader of the book of Proverbs, at this critical juncture, at the end of the first part and before starting to read chapters 10 and following, the reader, us, we're called upon to make a choice. Will we dine with woman wisdom, or will we dine with woman folly? Now, of course, the narrator is already trying to urge us to dine with woman wisdom, since he's telling us the consequences of dining with woman folly, which is you accept her invitation, she's going to murder you and bury you in her basement, so to speak. But her food looks so delicious. It's got all the seductive appeal of secret knowledge, whereas Woman Wisdom's knowledge is always public. She's always out there in public places, like at the gates of the city, or she's out on the path. But who are these women? What do they represent? Well, that takes us to Proverbs chapter 8, where we get the fullest description of Woman Wisdom. And here the narrator starts, says, "Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights along the way, where the paths meet, she takes her stand beside the gates leading into the city. At the entrances, she cries aloud, 'To you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. You who are a simple, gain prudence. You who are a foolish, gain understanding. Listen, for I have worthy things to say. I open my lips to speak what is right. My mouth speaks what is true, for my lips detest wickedness.'" And one of the things I want you to see as I'm reading through this is that Woman Wisdom is first of all, the epitome of all the virtues and qualities of wisdom as they're defined in the book of Proverbs. "All the words of my mouth are just. None of them is crooked or perverse. To the discerning, all of them are right. They're faultless to those who have knowledge. Choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her. I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence. I possess knowledge and discretion. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior and perverse speech. Counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have understanding and power." Now, as I read verses 15 and 16, I want you to take a special note of them because I'll come back and refer to them in the next session when we talk about New Testament appropriation of wisdom. "By me, kings reign and rulers make laws that are just. By me, princes rule and the nobles and all the nobles who rule on earth." I will say at this point, though, that throughout the book of Proverbs, while everybody, every individual, is encouraged to be wise, it's particularly important for leaders to be wise because their wisdom or folly affects the community as a whole. "My fruit is better than fine gold. What I yield surpasses choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness along the paths of justice, bestowing wealth on those who love me and making their treasuries full." Now, in the next section here, verses 22 through 31, we're going to read about Woman Wisdom's connection to creation. And if you have a English version that has footnotes, you'll notice all of a sudden there are going to be a lot of footnotes for variant readings. This section of Proverbs 8 has created a lot of interpretive anxiety over the years for reasons that I'll talk about more in the next session when we talk about New Testament appropriation. "But the Lord brought me forth as the first of his works before his deeds of old. I was appointed from eternity, from the beginning before the world began. When there were no oceans, I was given birth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains were settled in place, before the hills, I was given birth." So already she's being described as the firstborn of creation. And the message here is, if you want to know how creation works, then you better know this woman because she knows how it's put together and how it functions. "Before he made the earth or its fields or any of the dust of the world, I was there when he set the heavens in place, when he marked out the horizon on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above and fixed securely the fountains of the deep, when he gave the sea its boundary so the waters would not overstep his command, and when he marked out the foundations of the earth, Then I was the craftsman at his side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world, and delighting in mankind. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Listen to my instruction and be wise. Do not ignore it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my doors, waiting at my doorway. Whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord. But whoever fails to find me harms himself. All who hate me love death. Okay, now, having read these passages describing woman wisdom and woman folly, let's directly address the question, who is woman wisdom? Well, certainly, we could see immediately that she is a personification of Yahweh's wisdom. She embodies all the qualities of Yahweh's wisdom. But I would submit to you that there's even more here, and that even more is signaled to us by the location of her house. Her house is on the highest point of the city. And we all know what house is built on the highest point of an ancient Israelite city or an ancient Near Eastern city, and that's the temple. Who is woman wisdom? Well, ultimately, woman wisdom stands for Yahweh. Well, if woman wisdom is Yahweh, then who is woman folly? Because her house is at the highest point of the city as well. Well, the answer is that woman folly stands for all the gods and goddesses, all the false gods and goddesses that try to lure the affections of God's people away from Yahweh. So when you're talking about the choice of Proverbs 9, it's kind of like a gospel choice. Will I dine with, will I enter into an intimate relationship with Yahweh or with Baal, Marduk, Ishtar, all these false gods? So staying in the Old Testament here, we're to take this theological choice into our understanding of Proverbs 10 and following. A wise son brings joy to a father. A foolish son brings grief to his mother. What that's saying is, if you bring joy to your parents, then you are wise, which means that you are acting like a proper worshiper of Yahweh. But if you're bringing grief to your parents, then you're acting like an idolater. Because wisdom, righteousness, and godliness are connected in the book of Proverbs, as are foolishness, wickedness, and the worship of false gods. So lazy people are soon poor, hard workers get rich. That's more than practical advice. It's telling you, if you're lazy, you're acting like the worshiper of a false god, as opposed to a hard worker who is therefore wise and is acting like one who has entered into a relationship with woman wisdom. While we're on the subject, and especially after reading that last proverb, I need to quickly point out that, and this will sound kind of shocking maybe at first, proverbs aren't always true. Proverbs are true when applied to the right circumstance. And that's just of the nature of the proverb. That's why you get contradictory proverbs in the book of Proverbs. Like Proverbs 26, verse 4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself." Followed immediately by, "Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own estimation." If you treat them as universally true, they're contradictory. But if you understand that proverbs are only true if applied to the right circumstance, then you get it. I remember my grandmother used to talk in Proverbs all the time. And And when my family, this is when I was very young, of course, when my family and my aunt and uncle's family would come down, my mother and aunt would go into the kitchen and say, "Mom will help you prepare the turkey." And she would greet them with, "Too many cooks spoil the broth," which means get out of my kitchen, I'm doing it my way. But after dinner, with all those dirty dishes, she'd come bustling in the room and go, "Many hands make light work." And in one sense, those two kind of contradict each other. But since she spoke them at the right time, they were both true. So even a proverb like, "A wise son brings joy to a parent, a foolish son brings grief to a mother," that's only true if your parents themselves are godly and wise. If your parents are wicked and evil, godless, then all bets are off when it comes to Proverbs 10, verse 1. The other thing to remember about Proverbs is they don't make promises. They don't make promises. The three friends of Job treated the Proverbs as if they made promises, which is why they thought that Job was a sinner because he suffered. Proverbs rather tell you the best route to a desired conclusion, all other things being equal. So yeah, most of the time, lazy hands are soon poor, but you know, tell that to Paris Hilton, who is notoriously lazy and fabulously wealthy. Does she disprove Proverbs 10 verse 4? No, she doesn't. For 99.9% of us who don't inherit hundreds of millions of dollars from their hardworking ancestors, it is true for us. So those are things to keep in mind as kind of a side note when you're studying the book of Proverbs. But what we're going to do next is, having studied the figure of woman wisdom, where God is woman wisdom, who is relating to us as our instructor, we connect ourselves with the men to whom she's speaking. What we're going to do next is we're going to turn our attention to the New Testament and see how the New Testament appropriates this language.